أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Is this good? All right. So before I begin tonight's lectures, I would like to request that you join me in reciting Surah Al-Fatiha. We're going to be praying for the souls of the shuhada. We will be praying that Allah gives sabr to the families, those who've lost loved ones. We're also going to ask Allah that He elevate the station of those who gave them the means of defending themselves and their families, like Shaheed Qasim Soleimani. Please join me in reciting Surah Al-Fatiha, preceded by Salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
So brothers and sisters, it's very good to see you all. Inshallah, Allah accept this act of worship. There are some special spiritual instructions that we hear from Ayatollah Tahriri for this duration. And one of them is going to be something that we're going to do tonight, inshallah, after the dua. So three things that he recommended for the duration of the crisis, for our spiritual benefit. One of them is to, at least if we can recite it once, I'm going to say, let's make it easy for ourselves. If we can recite once in a day for the victory of the mujahideen, the dua, ilahi adhum al-bala. We're going to, inshallah, we'll do that tonight. There are other instructions, things that he mentions, but even if we could take that as one practical thing that we all do until for the duration of this, then we will get spiritual benefit. It also helps those mujahideen who are out there. Now, brothers and sisters, as you know, there is only one way for the liberation of Palestine. One way. That one way is resistance. They have to keep standing up to the bully, keep throwing punches until Allah liberates them. That's the only way. Allah tells us a story, and I'm going to mention one of the verses of the Quran. He was talking about the time of Nabi Musa. Nabi Musa and Nabi Harun, when they were facing their Pharaoh, the Pharaon of their time. Things got very tough. I'll mention the ayat of the Quran. You can read the verses that come before, the verses that come after. Things got very tough for Nabi Musa and Nabi Harun, but they were resisting. Things got to the stage that those merciful prophets of Allah asked Allah to destroy the enemies. When they said that, in the verse that I'm going to share with you, Allah says, I answered your prayers. But He says it's conditional. Those conditions apply to you and I. They apply to our brothers and sisters in Palestine. So brothers and sisters, if you can join me, because we want to look at the ayat of the Quran together. We want to learn from God's book together. We want to ponder the verses of the Quran so that we learn these lessons. If you can join me in searching for Surah number 10. So Surah number 10 and verse number 89. 1089. Anybody who finds it, if you find it, raise your hand. So then after that, okay. Let's see. Do you guys see this? Do you see? قَالَ قَدْ أُجِيبَتْ. Okay. So let's look at that verse. Let's look at the Arabic of this together. So they've prayed in the verse that preceded this, they prayed for the destruction of Allah's enemies, the Pharaoh of that time. And God answers, and He says, قَالَ, He said, قَدْ أُجِيبَتْ دَعْوَتُكُمَا. Your prayer, your dua, your supplication has been answered. I've responded. Yes, I'm going to do that, but it was conditional. What was the condition that they have to follow, that we have to follow, that our brothers and sisters in Philistine, that they have to follow? God said, the condition, fastaqima. You have to do istiqamat. You have to resist. You have to have sabr. فاستقيما ولا تتبعاني سبيل الذين لا يعلمون. And do not follow the path of those who do not know. Two conditions. One of the, by the way, we learned about this from the book. I believe we've covered this in the chapters that we've covered already. There were always two conditions that we as the ummah had to have in order to experience Allah's best. Whenever we as the ummah have these two conditions, Allah will move the mountain. Don't worry about that. What were the two conditions that we have to have that Allah refers to in the ayat of the Quran? One of them is sabr, resistance. The other one is iman, faith. Don't follow the path of those who do not know. You stick to Islam, your Islamic principles. You be good with God. So one iman, the other, that resistance, that sabr. So they have to do that. Of course, there's a powerful message in that for us as well. For those of us who are outside of the physical battlefield, because tonight's speech is going to be a lot about what we can do. There are big lessons in that for us as well. But it is our Islamic responsibility. It's our Islam, and I'm saying this because you and I, we have an agreement. Our agreement is this. We attend the lecture. We all attend the lecture, but we all have circles of friends outside. Other mu'mineen and mu'minat who we need to talk to. We need to share these points with. Right? This isn't just us come, we listen. No, no. We talk to others, we engage in conversation. So it is the duty of all Muslims. You've heard this from Ayatollah Sistani, may Allah protect him. You've heard the leaders speak. This is our Islamic responsibility that we must help our oppressed brothers and sisters in Palestine. Allow me to recite a hadith from our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And it's necessary for us to hear these things and know that I can't be a good Muslim without doing my job. What does the Prophet say? Man samia rajulan. Whoever hears a person, man samia rajulan, yunadi ya lil muslimin. And that man, that person, that individual, that nation is calling out for help from the Muslims. فَلَمْ يُجِبْهُ. But this Muslim says, I'm not going to answer that call. This isn't my fight. What does the Prophet say? فَلَيْسَ بِمُسْلِمْ. This is very serious. The test of Palestine for all of us, for our qiyamah, is very important. For the last day, whoever doesn't respond to the call of the oppressed is not a Muslim. Rasulullah says. Now our shuhada, they were the embodiment, I'm going to mention one of them, were the embodiment of these divine teachings. I remember Sheikh Banahyan shared a story about one of our shuhada, Shaheed Ahmad Mutawassilian. And Ahmad Mutawassilian, when you read his story, was so happy when Allah chose him to be able to go to fight Israel. Because that's why he went to Lebanon. He went there to take on the real Taghut. And he was so overwhelmed, so happy that Allah had given him this chance to take on the real monsters. Sheikh Banahyan tells a story. He says that he was giving a lecture. Who? Shaheed Ahmad Mutawassilian. He was giving a lecture. And in the lecture, he said this. He said, wherever on the earth there is a Muslim, and that Muslim calls out, Ya lil Muslimin, we need help from the Muslims. He said, we will rush to that corner of the earth. We will help that Muslim. We will assist that Muslim. We will liberate that Muslim. And then he said something more. And he said, wherever there isn't a Muslim, we will plant a Muslim. The Muslim will shout, Ya lil Muslimin, and we will go to that corner of the earth and we will liberate that corner. That was his idea for liberating the globe. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Jazakumullah khairan. Thank you. So that's the Islamic philosophy. I want to share another verse because this crisis, what's happening in Palestine, has created the perfect opportunity for you brothers and sisters to do your responsibility, which is the clarification jihad, not just to Muslims, but non-Muslims. There are a lot of non-Muslims right now, and this is the perfect time to start having conversations. One of your Islamic principles is this. You as a Muslim won't stand for oppression to any of Allah's creation, even if you aren't part of their deen. The verse I'm going to say is, even if you don't like the person personally, but their dhulm is happening, oppression is happening, God's laws are being violated, there should be no oppressed on the earth as long as the Muslims are alive. Now, this is a verse of Quran. I'd like brothers and sisters again to listen to this verse. So not only, you heard the hadith, if ever a Muslim calls and we rush to the assistance of that Muslim, is it only about Muslims? No, verse of the Quran. So brothers and sisters, can you turn with me? This is going to be part of the verse, but let's see if I've quoted the verse correctly. Can you turn with me to verse number, so surah number 5, and verse number 8. Surah number 5, verse number 8. Part of the verse should read as follows. Let's see if you guys see this. Do you guys see, وَلَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ? Does anybody see that? Yes? Okay. So let's read the Arabic of this together. وَلَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ شَنَآنُ قَوْمٍ عَلَىٰ أَلَّا تَعْدِلُوا. So God is saying, and let not the hatred of a people. I don't actually like this guy. This guy is not part of my, I don't actually like this guy, but dhulm's happening. He says, and let not hatred for people lead you to be unjust. Even if you don't like these guys. Justice. Allah's laws are not to be violated. I'dilu. Be just. Huwa aqrabu littaqwa. This is closer to taqwa, to observing God's laws. So brothers and sisters, we are with the madlumin wherever they are, right? We defend them whoever they are, let alone our brothers and sisters in Palestine, which is an Islamic responsibility to take care of them. And inshallah, I want to talk about some ways that you and I can assist our brothers and sisters in Palestine, even though we are outside of the physical battlefield. But of course, just as a reminder, because I don't want any Muslim to hear this and then mistake this, this doesn't mean, okay, this does not mean when we say that we will defend the oppressed wherever they are, the oppressed wherever they are, it doesn't mean we will defend those who believe in Qom Lut rights. Okay, we're not going to have a rainbow hijab. You know, not Qom Lut rights. Right? Those aren't rights. Okay, so not talking about that. We're talking about dhulm. Allah's law is being violated. So brothers and sisters, now today's topic is called Tawheed and the Abolition of Social Classes. The subject matter is something which is part of our core beliefs. So you and I, we've been covering this book for a while now. The leader has chosen to talk about the most fundamental areas of our belief. Our belief. We're talking about Tawheed, believing in the oneness of Allah. What we learned is that Tawheed, believing in the oneness of Allah, doesn't just mean, in my mind, I believe Allah is one and not two. That's not what it means. Tawheed is a covenant between us and Allah. I'm going to summarize, inshallah, once we've completed the section on Tawheed, what were those conclusions that we came away with? Because it's been a while, right? But Tawheed is a belief that creates action in the muwahhid. There are certain Islamic responsibilities on the shoulders of those who say Allah is one. One of them is the abolition of social classes. Now, brothers and sisters, this particular topic is absolutely related to what's happening in occupied Palestine. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. It's not limited to there, and I'm going to share why, but it's absolutely related. And I want to give a little bit of homework for you, brothers and sisters. Is that okay? A little bit of homework. It's going to help in the clarification jihad. Brothers and sisters, in order for us to do the clarification jihad correctly, I would like, brothers and sisters, we're talking about abolishing social classes. Social classes. It's not limited to occupied Palestine. But because of the current situation, it would be nice if brothers and sisters can either read up on, before we go through this chapter, read up on or watch videos about the Talmudic teachings of the Zionist occupiers. The videos are out there. I want to ask you guys a question. And this is something seriously to think about. What happened in the tarbiyah of Israeli children? It's been 75 years now. Their children, when they were first born, they were just as innocent as your children. What happened? What kind of tarbiyah did they receive that they can do those kind of atrocities and not bat an eye? How does that happen? How do you get to that stage that you could wreak this kind of havoc on another human being and it be okay? Like, how does that even happen? And now you're seeing that you're watching them when they, like, now they should be fighting for public opinion, right? You would think that. You're losing. Fight for public opinion. Now when you watch them on interviews, they are talking down to the reporters. They're not helping themselves. They're saying there is no civilian crisis. They're threatening reporters. What happened? How could they? What's going on? Those Talmudic beliefs are going to be very important for your clarification jihad. Okay? What do they believe? How could you be like that? Maybe you've just heard this. Just now, with all that's going on, rockets, Hezbollah is on their doorstep, the Muslims are everywhere, things are going crazy. Just now, some extremist settlers and the IDF soldiers took three Palestinians, stripped them, beat them, urinated on them. You're watching them go into the other occupied territories and the savagery over there. You would think, okay, well, look, Hamas is going crazy. Wouldn't you slow down? What are the beliefs? Like, how do you get to do, like, what are you doing? So brothers and sisters, if you can do a little bit of that homework, what is it that they believe? But don't let it just be something that you're getting from the minbar. You read it, you listen, you watch the videos to see what they really believe about everybody else on the earth. I'm going to summarize, but again, homework for brothers and sisters. Before we read the chapter, we're going to go to the Quran with questions. What does the Quran mean by a classless society? What happens if you don't have a classless society? Why are they even? There's a lot to that. Anyhow, now, what they believe, what you believe, is that we are all the children of Adam. All of us are Bani Adam, with all the children of Adam. They believe they are God's chosen people. The rest of us were created to serve them. We are human animals. If we accept our slave status, then we can be allowed to live as second-class citizens. It's okay. If we push back, if we fight back, we are to be slaughtered with impunity. This is their beliefs. Now they're saying it out loud. Their ministers, these far-right ministers,
By the way, this is why Israel's going to lose, right? You've heard that hadith before from Imam Askari. I believe it was from Imam Askari. He says, your worst enemy is the one who hides his enmity. The ones who spell it out for you, who tell you, we're dealing with subhuman chattel, those are easy. But anyhow, inshallah, you look at that, you're going to get more out of the ayat of the Quran when you go to the Quran with questions. The Prophet says this, hadith, inna miftah al-ilm, truly the key of knowledge, as-su'al, questions. Go to the Quran with questions. What does it mean if you have a classless society? Why would that be important? Where is that mentioned in the Quran? Does the Quran tell us, because these are not the original teachings of Nabi Musa, Nabi Harun, they taught Islam, they were the Muslims. This is not their teachings. But the Zionist rabbis still believe those perverted teachings. They allow for this kind of genocide. Now, but I said, so one part of it, the lecture is absolutely related to what's happening in Palestine, but it's not limited to there. When we talk about classes, and you may have read, some of you may have read the book ahead of time, you already are a little bit aware of where we're going with this. They explained, and the example in the book was the caste system in India, and how that was one of the most wild, bizarre systems, something we read about in school. But the point was this. This is part and parcel of every society that is built on jahiliyyah. Racism is a tool used by the Fir'aun to do this. But even if you have an ethnically homogenous society, you still have these divided classes. One class is the class that benefits at the top. You and I have no idea how wealthy they are. We have, you and I, we think somebody has a nice car. We have no idea what wealth is. We have, the bank accounts of even one of these cats. We have no idea. So there's one group, the society is built for them, built by the rich, for the rich. The laws serve the rich. What happens is, if we're able to grasp this properly and share it, the vast majority of the world are not that 1%, that less than 1%. They're like you. They were disenfranchised, used, abused, trying to make their ends meet. So I just want to explain, we're going to talk about this later in detail, but I want to mention one of the ayat of the Quran that lets you know it's here in America too. It's in democratic societies too. All societies based on jahiliyyah, whether they are pagan societies like the Indian society back then, or modern day shirk, secular Christianity, same thing. Ayat of Quran. So brothers and sisters, can you join me in looking at surah number 28 and verse number 4? We're going to look at part of the verse. And we're going to learn that this is part of the strategy of Fir'aun. Fir'aun then, Fir'aun now, Fir'aun in the future. Guys, do you see in surah 28 and verse number 4, does anybody see a verse that starts like this? Inna Fir'aun. Yes? Okay. So let's read this verse together. And remember, we already learned the hadith. The Quran was not revealed only about Pharaoh who died. We're looking for today's Pharaoh, the system of Pharaoh. So what's Pharaoh like? Inna Fir'aun, definitely Pharaoh, truly Pharaoh, ala fil ard. He was arrogant in the land. He exalted in the land. What did he do? وَجَعَلَ أَهْلَهَا شِيَعًا. He divided the people of the land into groups. He divided the people of the land into classes, to groups. What did he do with those groups? One part of the strategy was this. يَسْتَضْعِفُ طَائِفَةً مِّنْهُمْ. He weakened one group out of them. So classes, but weakening certain groups, they do the work for everybody else. Yes, in India, it was the untouchables and all the others. But that's not the only way. It's here in civilized societies as well. Now, brothers and sisters, given the on-the-ground realities, although that's our topic, and inshallah, we'll be studying that chapter, and we're looking to be able to explain it, each one of you, in your own words to somebody else, because you're inviting people to Islam. Now, we're going to cover that chapter, inshallah. We'll be looking at those verses of the Quran. We'll be looking at the verses that talk particularly about the Zionist ideology. But we're going to do that another time. Because of the on-the-ground realities, I decided to call an audible. Brothers and sisters, you and I, we're very close to the top of the mountain. Liberating the world from all of the tawaghit. The return of your master, Imam Mahdi. We're very close to that. But one big test for all of us is the test of Palestine. What will you do if occupied Palestine exists during your time? The leader says it's the most important issue of Islam today. So, I want to share with you, brothers and sisters, the reasons why Israel is not making it out of this one. It might seem bloody. There's a lot of carnage. Israel is not going to win. I'm going to explain why. But Israel is not going to win this time. Why isn't Israel going to win this time? I want to explain some principles. And then after that, go into some of the details and talk a little bit about what our job is. Because there are certain things that you and I can do outside of that battlefield that they can't do. But if you do those, then God will count you amongst those who helped liberate occupied Palestine. So in order for Dhulm to happen, there have to be three elements in place. Dhulm, if it's going to take place, if it's just going to be that we lose, the Dhalim wins, three elements have to be in place. One of them is the zalim, that mean, cowardly bully. That's one, the zalim. But it's not just the zalim. There also has to be a madloom, somebody who's going to take the beating from the zalim and just roll over. Allah doesn't like those who just roll over, who just take it. They're in Jahannam too. So there has to be a zalim, and then there has to be a madloom who just take the beating. This is my lot in life. I don't get to live a good life. I'm a second-class citizen. The zalim and that madloom, and then there's another group that also has to be there in order for dhulm to take place. In order for dhulm to take place, there also has to be bystanders, spectators who are just watching this happen. Unless those three are in place, dhulm won't take place. So because you, as the ummah of Rasulullah Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, because you are saying, I'm not going to let this happen on my watch. Enough is enough. The ummah is pushing back. Because of that, they don't have the bystanders. You're not indifferent. It's not just going to happen on your watch. You're going to be pushing back against the zalimeen. Okay? But now we have to talk a little bit about our responsibility. I want to talk about the clarification jihad with a little bit of focus on what it is we're actually supposed to do. But one of them is to talk about a little bit about how vital is the clarification jihad to the liberation of Quds. Is it just that you and I can say, Israel's not going to win this time, sit back, relax? Or does the clarification jihad play an actual vital role, a critical role? Because we have our foot on Israel's throat, but Israel isn't dead yet. So how important is it? Let's talk about the thawab of it. The reward of you having conversations, of you explaining to people, of you connecting the dots. How great is the reward for the clarification jihad? Once our prophet was speaking to a man about the reward of guiding someone. Listen to the hadith. He says, لِأَنْ يَهْدِيَ اللَّهُ بِكَ رَجُلًا وَاحِدًا. If God even guides one person through you, Allah is the Hadi, but you do your part, clarification jihad. If God even guides one person through you, he says, خَيْرٌ لَكَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا وَمَا فِيهَا. It is better for you than the entire dunya wa ma fiha. Now, that means conversations. That means not being shy. That means people come over and they're asking questions. And you're looking for these opportunities. You want to share. You want to talk. You want to engage in conversation. You want to unravel the knots. Out of the clarification jihad, how important is the digital resistance? Not only the conversations, which are necessary, but the digital resistance. The leader says, he says, if I was not the leader today, if I wasn't the leader, he says that I would be in charge of the social media in Iran. It's that important. Those online conversations, untying the knots, connecting the dots, sharing and posting small messages, clarifying, talking, is that important? So, brothers and sisters, I want to mention a couple of things for us to keep in mind when we're doing our responsibility in this regard. One of them is about debunking the myths. We have to make sure that we're debunking the myths. But I would also request, brothers and sisters, let's make sure we're accurate. The truth is on our side. We don't have to fabricate anything. Our information is clear. Don't fabricate anything. Share the stuff you're sure about and do research. So that's one. Number two is to make sure that the world is aware that the Palestinians are facing the most merciless enemy the Muslims have ever faced, at least in modern history. We have never had anybody face this kind of a tyrant. All you have to do to clarify this, brothers and sisters, start looking at those IDF soldiers who broke the silence. They'll tell you what they did. I'll give you one tiny example that's nothing compared to the atrocities, because there's so many atrocities. One example that the IDF soldiers talk about is this. They say one of our jobs in the occupied lands is to make our presence felt. So what that means is it's 10 o'clock at night. We pick a random Palestinian house we know this guy isn't a terrorist, and we go inside their house. We line all the women up. We line the children up. We're taking pictures. We're walking through the house. We're searching it, flipping it upside down. We do that for a couple of hours. Then we start on the next house. And we do that till 8 o'clock in the morning. And the Palestinians, imagine the horror. You and I, can you imagine armed soldiers, police, breaking into your house, lining you up, weapons, taking pictures of your kids, dragging your small children out of bed, photographing them, and it being so ordinary. The IDF soldiers said that one of them was an American. He said, what was shocking to me, he said that we were going into occupied West Palestine. He said that what we did was we came to this Palestinian man's house. We broke in, we set up camp, and we just occupied his house. They told me, because I could speak English, they said, you talk to the guy. And he said, the guy acted like this happened all the time. He was shocked that we came in, we held him. He said, we wouldn't let him leave. We wouldn't let his family leave. The guy's like, well, I've got to go to work the next day, such and such. We just kept them prisoners. We just did that. If you look at what the apartheid is, what it's like to go through those cameras. Look at, just as part of your research, how many Palestinian children were born when their mothers got stopped at these checkpoints and they wouldn't let the ambulance go through. And the children are born right there in the ambulance or on the ground.
right? And they just won't let them go through. How many thousands? Like, the stuff is so horrifying. Literally, you and I, we have no idea how savage they are. So, part of our job is to make sure the people of the world are aware of part of Israel's law. They don't know how terrible it is. It is unbelievable. And you're doing research. You're just sharing facts. So one part of it is definitely to do that, but make sure they know just how savage these individuals are. Another one, brothers and sisters, is to compare notes. Now, some of you are better at engaging with the enemy than others. You've learned how to debunk the myths. You've learned how to work your way around shadow bans. Share your information, compare notes. We should even have, one of the things I would like if we could do here in Hadi would be this, that we have a class where we bring brothers and sisters in who are interested in engaging in the clarification jihad, and we make the information that we have available to them so everybody has accurate, up-to-date information. You're aware of the doubts that they cast, the techniques, how to fight back, what to do. That will be something that would be very much good to do. Now, another one we should think about is not shying away from explaining Islam as the solution. It's not that you only have permission to talk about Palestine and what's happening in Palestine. No, you can explain that Islam is the solution. If you want to do that, one of the criteria for doing the clarification jihad is learning about Islam. You don't want to share your opinions. As required reading, we should all be reading Reclaiming the Narrative and sharing that. When we're talking about the Ahlul Bayt, we should all be reading Imam Hussein's Brothers in Arms so that we do it the right way, right? So the points that we know about Islam, these are facts about Islam, everybody should be sharing them, but we need to make sure we do that. Now, we also want to make sure that this doesn't consume us, that because we are so concerned with what happens, that we forget our other Islamic responsibilities, our exercise, our health, our families. Well, we do all of our responsibilities, but when you have some time to engage in the clarification jihad, then definitely you want to do that. Now, another one is the idea of making sure you activate others. Everybody in the ummah who can push back is not pushing back. There are some who even now, even despite this level of savagery and barbarism, still they don't think it's their taklif to push back, it's their responsibility to push back. That means you and I, part of the clarification jihad, is to talk to these individuals. Don't get frustrated, by the way. Sometimes you and I, we're like, well, why not? Why aren't you posting? For some of us, we also weren't posting. We also were concerned. We also were afraid. We have to go in and untie the knots. Why is it that now someone still wouldn't feel it's their responsibility, right? That's our job. We go in, we sit, we talk. We're not frustrated. We're having conversations. We're coming from a place of love. Imam Ali says, "Man ahabbaka nahak." The person who loves you stops you. Now, one part of the clarification jihad is making sure that we make people understand that their test is not Fir'aun of that time, Yazid of that time. Their test, some people think they're saving themselves for Imam Mahdi, right? So I'm not doing it right now. When Imam Mahdi comes, I'm going to, right? With those individuals, part of untying the knots is making them understand the test is right now. Not a future, a vague future. Who knows when Imam Mahdi is going to come? So I have no responsibility to him. But I go crazy for Imam Hussein, but I wasn't there then. Your test is now. That's just a line. You're going to find other ways of doing this. A line from Ziyarat Ashura. We say this to Aba Abdullah. Ya Aba Abdullah. So we're addressing the Imam. Inni silmun liman salamakum. I am at peace with those who are at peace with you. وَحَرْبٌ لِمَنْ حَرَبَكُمْ And I'm at war with those who are at war with you. إِلَى يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ It's the line of Imam Hussein. It's not Imam Hussein then. This is now. إِلَى يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ Imam Hussein in his famous words says that
The Ummah would be destroyed if there was a leader like Yazid. It's the system of Yazid.
So that's part of our job. One part of it is explaining fake taqiyya, wrong taqiyya. What is that? Because taqiyya is part of the deen. It is part of the deen. We do have hadith about that. Chapter number 10 of the leader's book explains what true taqiyya is. You have to go over, read that, explain to people so they know. But I'm going to talk about debunking fake taqiyya. Part of the reason for the delay of the coming of the imam is people have a wrong understanding of taqiyya. And we've been warned about that by the Ahlul Bayt. Part of the misery of the Muslims right now is fake taqiyya, wrong taqiyya. Maybe people's hearts might be in the right place, but it's absolutely wrong. Let me give you an example. This story is from the time of Imam Sajjad. So Imam Sajjad warns us. He says this. He says, ittaqu Allah ma'ashira shi'atina. O Shia, he says, have taqwa of Allah. وَلَا تَسْتَعْمِلُ الْهُوَيْنَا وَلَا تَقِيَّةَ عَلَيْكُمْ He says, beware of weakness, being intimidated. And it is not, there is no taqiyya, that's your responsibility. And he tells the story of a man at the time of Amirul Mu'mineen. And this guy was bitten by a snake. The guy, it was so terrible, the guy's thinking he's going to lose his life. He was in so much pain, he's screaming and crying like a woman, grown man. They bring this man to the presence of Amirul Mu'mineen. He says, you're going to live. Some months later, they bring the man back, the guy's still suffering. At this stage, the imam says, do you know what happened? Why did that snake bite you? Why misery? He says that Salman bin Farsi was being attacked. People were saying things, people were doing things. And you could have pushed back. It wasn't the case you were going to lose your life. It wasn't the case you're going to blow your brains out. You could have pushed back, you didn't. And that snake is because of this. He said, do istighfar. Make the firm niyyah. It'll never be the case that I will do taqiyya in an area where I'm not supposed to. Make that niyyah so you can get cured. So, this wrong understanding of taqiyya, the leader explains what the right taqiyya is. It's another way of moving forward. You're pushing back against the enemies. The Ahlul Bayt were martyred because of taqiyya. This taqiyya is not the right taqiyya. What happens though is that wrong taqiyya is part of the problem. People thinking they don't have a responsibility. I'm going to give you a story that's not true, inshallah. Can I give you a story that's not true? Sometimes you know that the conclusion is wrong, and that tells you that the formula must be a mistake. The conclusion's wrong, the formula must be a mistake. Once they said there was this scientist, and this scientist was studying frogs, and he wanted to see how far could frogs jump. So he set up a line, he got a frog, and he ordered the frog. He said, jump, frog, jump. And the frog jumped 4 feet. And he wrote in his notebook, a frog with 4 feet jumps 4 feet. Then he cut off one of the frog's legs. And he ordered the frog. He said, jump, frog, jump. And the frog jumped. And this time, he jumped 3 feet. And he wrote in his book, a frog with 3 feet jumps 3 feet. Then he cut off another leg. He said, jump, frog, jump. The frog jumped. He jumped 2 feet. He said, a frog with 2 feet jumps 2 feet. Finally, he cut off the leg, and the frog had one leg. He said, jump, frog, jump. And the frog jumped. And he only jumped 1 foot. And he said, a frog with 1 foot jumps 1 foot. Then he cut off the last leg. Then he said, jump, frog, jump. And the frog didn't jump. And he ordered again, jump, frog. And he didn't jump. So he wrote in his book, he said, a frog with no legs goes deaf. This is for understanding. Is my taqiyya wrong? Is my taqiyya wrong? I'll give you an example. This should be clear. You go to the book, explain what are examples, what is taqiyya, what isn't taqiyya, but how do I understand by the conclusion that it's wrong? Very clear example. The leader, this is for the camp of the leader, and those who are understanding the Quran from the Quran, What does the Quran teach us? The book you're reading is 500 pages of the leader practicing taqiyya. Imam Khamenei practicing taqiyya. 500 pages. When the Savak are there in the gathering, the leader, when he's giving those lectures, these 500 pages, the leader's been arrested 5 times. The Savak are there and he knows that they're there. He's speaking, doing taqiyya, because he's trying to get the message for it. He explained what taqiyya truly is in Islam, Imam Hussein's brothers in arms, but he's practicing taqiyya. He's practicing taqiyya. For some of us, because we think of danger, the danger threshold, right? For here in the West, if we don't do taqiyya, there's a slap on the wrist. But we think that danger threshold, whatever that is, in our mind, our formula, that means I shouldn't speak the truth because there's danger. The leader explains what it is. In whatever case, my formula is because there's danger, I shouldn't speak out. When the leader was practicing taqiyya, when there was real danger, read the book. If you think talking about Palestine is dangerous now, what would you have thought of the leader delivering those lectures with the Savak sitting there? When he's been arrested? When the other mu'mineen are there? Isn't he aware of taqiyya? He's a mujtahid for 20 years. He doesn't know. He's practicing taqiyya. And then he's delivering that lecture, and listen to the words of the leader. How does he push back? Right in front of us. So, if my taqiyya would mean attending the lectures of the leader at that time would have been haram. If now tweeting about Palestine, attending a rally, if that's haram, if that's difficult, then what about sitting in the lectures of your leader? Sitting in the lectures of your leader under the most severe circumstances. You 100% would have said that that's absolutely wrong. It's ilqa'u nafs ta'luka, throwing yourself into perdition. It's against the Quran. So, if your taqiyya means the revolution of Imam Khomeini was wrong, supporting Imam Khomeini was haram, because it was difficult. Allah didn't say taqiyya. Yes, they did. So, if you wouldn't have supported Imam Khomeini, you wouldn't have been in the lectures of Ayatollah Khamenei because of your wrong taqiyya, then 100% you definitely would have said helping Imam Hussein in Karbala was absolutely haram. You think the revolution was difficult under the Savak. What do you think about Karbala?
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
Now, I know we've used up our time. I have just some brief sentences and I'm going to let you guys go. Why is it that Palestine is going to win this time? One part of it, the Muslims are going to push back. You're going to do your job. One part of it are the Junud of Iblis. Those Zionist soldiers who are trying to go into Gaza. Those guys, those are the Shimmers of the time. The Khulis of the time. Those guys, you think they're walking into a buzzsaw. Literally, they're going to be putting their hands in a blender if they go inside there. On the other side, the Junud of Allah are men who are longing to meet God. They are clever, they are intelligent, and they're waiting for them. They outfox the Zionists in the settlements. What do you think they have waiting for them in Gaza? They're waiting for those guys. It will be doomsday for the Zionists if they go in. You think they can handle those guys? Muhammad al-Dhaif and these guys, oh, they got something for the Zionists when they go inside there. You don't worry about that. They come inside there. You talk about a body bag war. Urban fighting with highly trained commandos who are looking for God, who've been suffering for 75 years, who have never had a victory of this magnitude in 75 years. You think they're going to let you go? Oh, you're going to catch hell when you go inside there.
But that's just Gaza. See, you have to make this clear for the enemy. What's going to happen when the Iraqi resistance that's already told you we're getting involved, when they get involved? What do you think will happen when Syria gets involved, the resistance in Syria? You've already seen the rockets from Yemen. This hasn't even started yet. Only the resistance knows the 0 hour. That's nothing. Wait till the Rizwan brigades come in. You want to see hell on earth? They've been waiting for you. Somebody needs to tell these Zionists, don't do that. Don't send your... You know what? Because it's those gutless politicians who know those kids are walking into a bloodbath. But they don't care. It's not their kids. They're going to go in, those servants, those slaves, those abid of the Tawagit are going to go in there, and it'll be a body bag war. But the resistance is coming over the wall. You've seen. They've already blinded the eyes of Israel. The Rizwan brigades are coming in. That's nothing. Wait until you hear the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. These guys are finished. So no, it's different this time. You know, but inshallah they come to their senses. Inshallah they call off the dogs. But if they push this, you and I will see the death of Israel, but a lot sooner. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.